From an early age, we're all immersed in sport. For some, it fails to ignite a spark inside us, but for those of us who catch the fire, it's the beginning of a lifelong journey filled with highs and lows, which all matter far more than they should. After all, it's just a game, we're told. Sport is a certainty, it's a point of reference in an increasingly uncertain world, and the bonds formed with either sport in general or a hometown club transcend both time and generations. Today, much of what sport has always meant to true fans has been somehow lost in a blizzard of corporate communications, fireworks, and froth. The attachments that were once so strong seem more trivial in the global age of televised sport as entertainment. What was once authentic has become increasingly staged. In this podcast, we'll get back to the things that sport has always meant to true fans. We'll take you from the boardroom to the dressing room to the pitch, but we'll do it not as a corporate communication, but as true fans of sport, and we'll do it with authenticity. We'll be honest, and we'll speak our minds. This is a podcast for true sports fans, and the one thing all fans have in common is a passion for the game. Now, we certainly don't mean to cause any offence, so if you find yourself taking any, just shrug it off and get back in the game, because this is about the game, and the game is bigger than all of us.
We've got some fresh new young talent doing some things that I know you haven't heard before.
One, two, three, listen.
Welcome, everybody, to this week's episode of Are You Not Entertained? Roger, are you with me?
I am with you, but I sense you're sounding a little bit low today, Grant.
Well, look, we are recording this as the whistle is still echoing from the 5-1 drubbing that Arsenal put on my beloved Fulham this morning. I have to say, I can't complain about the result. Arsenal were good, but geez, Fulham were dreadful.
I heard the defence was very poor. You know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago. I'm really worried. If you're leaking goals like that, you can't grind out 1-0s that get you crucial points.
I think we've let in 23 goals in 8 games.
Yeah, that's not going to work, mate.
That's not going to work. That's not going to keep you in the Premier League, that is for sure. So, we were in it at 0-0, Rog, and we were in it again at 1-1. The rest of the game, not really much to say. A couple of fantastic goals for Arsenal. I mean, look, I have to say Arsenal were very, very good, but jeez, it was depressing to watch. I've got to say.
I'll take it on myself today to lift your spirits a little bit.
Well, okay. Well, listen, I'll tell you what. We'll. There's nothing that lifts my spirits more than goal on goal. But I'm going to break my habit this week, and I'm going to go first simply because I have a very strong feeling that you are going to take exactly the same own goal as me. So I want to get it in first. So I'm going to start. I'm going to start with my own goal, and let's see if I have taken the thing that you're going to talk about. My own goal comes from the world of professional basketball in America, the NBA. God bless them. Who have announced that they are going to start to sell you the last quarter of a game for $1.99. So you can watch the third quarter until the end of the game. Now, this is basically a continuance of some of the things they put in place during the Summer League. But already, if you have the NBA app, you will get notifications of games that are close. And it's now going to give you the option of paying a couple of bucks to watch the last quarter of the game. And this troubles me massively. You know, Rog, you and I have talked a lot about this in terms of how sports and televised sports is having to change to adapt to the current tastes. But this, to me, seems like the thin end of a very, very nasty wedge.
Well, you know, we did mention it. I can't remember whether it was with Pat or another time. I don't agree with you on this. I kind of think this is...
I know you don't.
And I probably should, but I don't, because I kind of think that people are just so time poor these days that the service of whether it's, you know, come in for the red hot end to the game or let me provide you an excellent highlights package, I think we should see that as a positive. And if you do feel you want to watch the whole 90 minutes and get the popcorn out, then that's not taken away from you. So I just see this as an additional optional, and for some people it will just hit the spot, Grant, and I don't think that's an own goal.
See, I don't know, Roger, I disagree with this. I think what you're going to find is that advertising rates go up for the fourth quarter because they'll see that a lot of people are tuning into the fourth quarters. I mean, I think you're right. The reasons for it about people being time poor is absolutely correct. But I suspect that you're going to end up with just the diehard fans watching the games, and that's going to hit advertising revenues, and that's going to hit the money in the game. I suspect that this might well end up shooting the organisers of the leagues in the foot.
Well, let's see. Let's see what happens. So much is going to change in American football, whether it's this or whether it's, you know, the direct betting deals that they're now starting to do, that's going to bring in very, very significant revenue streams. American football, and especially Adam Silver at the NBA, is such an innovator. I look at this one with a little bit of surprise, yeah. But I think it's the right thing to do. We have to wait and see, Grant.
Well, look, the NFL Red Zone has been a tremendous success, which basically is a channel for those watching, listening that don't know about it. It's a channel where it just switches to the games where one of the teams is close to scoring a touchdown, and people are sitting watching that in their droves now. They're not bothering to watch the rest of the games. They're just watching the channel that switches. No, look, absolutely right. But my point is not that it's a bad idea for the fans, but that it's a bad idea for the game to take away the people that want to watch whole games. It'd be very interesting to see what happens to attendance, what happens to, as I was watching the Ryder Cup last week, you realise that being at an event like that is actually a worse experience, I would contend, than watching it on TV. But the last round of the Masters, similar. If you're watching it on TV, you get to experience the ebbs and flows, whereas if you're on the course, and I have been there, you really have no idea what's going on. So I just don't know what this is going to do to attendances when you can sit at home, cherry pick, and as you said, get your time back. I don't know. I think this might be an own goal for the league.
Well, whilst we're on American football, as you were talking there, the thing that actually struck me more than that news is all the memes that are going on about the changes in the sacking rules for quarterbacks. And I don't know whether you've seen on social media all the parodies about how it's becoming, like you touch me with a feather.
Touch football.
And it's a, yeah. I mean, come on, this is the NFL. That I think that's very worrying. And that one, I think I would probably be against when you change fundamentally the rules of the sport like that. But allowing somebody to tune in just for the last quarter, I think if you're imaginative, if you market it properly, you put the right sponsorship package around it, I don't think you take anything away from the people that want to enjoy the whole thing. And then, of course, the stadium thing's completely different. Being there is a completely different segmentation of the audience. What we're talking about here is segmenting the TV audience from the ones that want to watch 90 or four quarters to ones that just want to watch the last one. And, if I was Silva, I think I would have probably done the same thing, Grant.
Well, look, you have more experience in these things than me, Rog. All right, well, look, you get to pick your own goal or your goal. What do you want to go for first?
Well, on the goal, I changed my mind yesterday from what it was going to be to the Gary Neville rant about Mourinho. I'm sure most people have seen that by now. And I just felt that really was authentic, coming back to what the podcast is all about. You could see that he felt that his club was being managed badly, being managed without class, without decorum, without the values that he had installed in him by Sir Alex. And he just let rip yesterday. And some of the things he said are things we've said before. There are certain elements of non-UK owners who don't understand. And there comes a time when you say, well, I've chosen four managers now. Seems to be that none of them are working out. Maybe it's me. Maybe I'm a very competent guy to put together a leveraged buyout of Manchester United with all kinds of financial engineering. But when I'm running the club on a day-to-day basis and I have to make what I would call emotional intelligence decisions around football, maybe I'm not qualified. And Ed Woodward should really think about that a little bit. You know, Gary Neville said it very clearly yesterday, and I think he's 100% right. Man United, we said this with Pat, are not in balance. I happen to be a big Mourinho fan, and, you know, I feel that how he's been treated is unfair. And you know, good on Gary Neville, and that's why he's my goal of this week.
Well, it was interesting. I didn't see the rant. I read about it before I saw it, and I saw the headlines, and I immediately assumed that he was having a pop at Mourinho. So I was actually quite surprised when I actually saw it that it was Ed Woodward that he was having a pop at, and he was actually defending Mourinho. And the fact that he didn't get any central defenders during the off season, I was quite surprised. But look, I have to agree with you. I think it was a fantastic rant, and Gary Neville has become just the best football pundit perhaps I've seen in my lifetime. He is authentic. He's got the experience. He doesn't back down. He has a tremendous understanding of the game, and I would imagine that if the Manchester United hierarchy aren't listening to what Neville said, because he's a Manchester United man through and through, they're out of their minds. I mean, if I was in charge at Man United, I'd get Neville in and ask him, how the hell do we fix this week?
You think that's what they're thinking, Grant? You know, like,
no.
When you look at the dividends they're taking out about every year.
No, I don't. That's my point. I said, if that was me, that's exactly what I'd be thinking. But this is the problem when you go from football clubs being run by football people to football clubs being run by businessmen. It's an entirely different way of thinking.
Well, you see, this is, we said this before, they're not mutually exclusive. You know, the word, as Pat said, was balance. And what strikes you at Manchester United, there isn't the balance just now. Somebody needs to come in and use the kind of people around the club, and there's plenty, but people need to come in and get that sorted out, because, you know, it is the biggest club in the world and it's just a shambles. You know, what are they, 10th? It's just a shambles. And in many ways, I was so pleased yesterday that Mourinho or the team turned it around in the second half. I still think he probably won't be there at Christmas, but it wasn't the day yesterday after the Gary Neville rant for Mourinho to lose. And I'm glad the last 20 minutes went the way they did.
Well, but you know, the trouble with Manchester United is you can't really just fire Mourinho. Like, you have to have a big name lined up to replace him. I mean, obviously Zidane has been the guy that everyone's been talking about. But you know, this isn't just a club changing a manager. This is much bigger than that, Rog.
Yeah. I don't think Zidane's the answer. I think you need somebody that can do what Sir Alex did. They tried that with Moyes, didn't work. It was never going to work with Van Gaal. Mourinho, they say, short term. I actually think, you know, Mourinho could be the solution, but you need to put things around him different from the way they are today. I saw him at Inter Milan completely take ownership of a club and have the results that he did have. And he would have stayed if obviously the bigger prize wasn't available at Real Madrid. But, you know, if he goes, who do you go for? People talked about Brendan Rodgers. I'm not sure.
Liverpool manager, that would be a bitter pill for United fans to swallow. I mean, the big question to me is, for United fans, and I don't know because I'm not one, is it about the results or is it about the style of play? Because, you know, they had both under Ferguson. You know, they played this great swashbuckling type of football and won everything. Would they be happy with playing, you know, Mourinho-type football and grinding out wins? I don't know.
You see, I think this is a little bit of a narrative that's wrong. You know, if you look at the early Chelsea sides under Mourinho, where you had Robin and Damien Duff in full flow, they weren't defensive teams. Mourinho's evolved, obviously. Maybe he's become a little bit more that way, but let's be honest, he had to, because in Spain he was coming against the greatest club team the world's ever seen, and like, when you're not the strongest, you have to like negate rather than create. So I guess his philosophy changed a little bit there. And the same at Man United, he inherited a shambles, and he says that last year finishing second was his greatest ever achievement in football.
Well, I'm
not
agree with
sure
that.
That's for completely sure. True, but you
I
know,
agree with that. How Manchester United finished second last year, I have no idea.
Well, there you go. So, you know, I don't think he's this busted flush that the world's passed him by And, you know, thank goodness that we now play a different way. Mourinho is a great manager. However, you need to realise that he will only function under a certain set of circumstances above him. It may not be pleasing to everybody, but they go together. You can't pick him and then put the different context around him. That's a recipe for disaster. And that's unfortunately what the Glazers are doing just now.
Well, it seems to be. All right, well, look, we've got your own goal left and my goal left. So why don't we do your own goal so we at least get to finish on a positive story in this segment. So what's your
my own goal this week was a BBC article asking whether Messi would have been successful in the Premiership.
Okay.
I don't know whether you saw that.
I didn't see that.
It got quite a lot of coverage, so much so that some of the people that mentioned it and talked about it, I said, but surely they're being ironic. And the reply back was, the BBC don't do irony. So, you know, I looked at the article myself and I don't think it was ironic. There was some serious analysis there to try and work out whether, from his European record, he would have been successful in the Premiership. And I want to come back to what we said the other day about why there's no British managers anymore. And my answer was, because they're insular. This, and now I realise I'm speaking to an Englishman and an English football fan, and this is why it's, I think, going to be interesting. Let me tell you, this is why England have won nothing for 60 years. They do not want to look outside the Premiership and their own borders and realise maybe we've got things to learn. It's held them back as players. It's definitely held them back as managers. And this is a prime example. It's the thing that gets reasonable people like me who start watching tournaments and rooting for England turning maybe by round three when you just can't take it anymore. You guys need to look at yourself and say, enough of this, we invented the game. We've got a lot to learn. Our managers are well off the pace and it's time that we started not saying, can Cavani do it in the Premiership? Can Messi do it in the Premiership? So that's my own goal, Grant.
Well, look, you know, I'd love to pick holes in that, Roger. I really would. As an English football fan, I should take great umbrage in what you're saying, particularly coming at me from a Scotsman. But look, sadly, I don't think you're wrong. I mean, I don't think the Premiership necessarily, you know, represents English football anymore because there are so many foreign players and so many different styles of play in the Premier League that I don't think you can equate the kind of football you see in the Premier League to the England team anymore. But I think you're right about the managers. I think you're right about the insular nature of British football. And I definitely agree with you that we need to stop this whole "we invented the game" thing, because that was getting old about 50 years ago. And it's definitely getting older. So, look, I'd love to disagree with you, but I can't. I think you're absolutely spot on. I don't know what the answer is, because I think this same problem has been in place for certainly my lifetime. And I don't see...
Yeah, why do you have somebody like the BBC, who is a major stakeholder in British football with Match of the Day, opinion leaders like Lineker? How do they allow an article like that to go on their website?
Well, very simply, they need a lot of content. Throw the name Messi up there, people are going to read it. Throw in a contentious argument that's going to get people talking, and there's modern journalism for you.
Many times have we talked about that outside the context of sport?
I don't think it's any more complicated than that. I wish it was, but I think after the hatchet job he personally did on Spurs in that Champions League game, when he basically beat them on his own. It was a rush to get all kinds of Messi articles out there, and if you can get ones out that start a discussion and quote unquote drive clicks, then it's a success. It doesn't matter the quality of the article, it's about the clicks.
Well, I think that whole type of journalism is coming to an end, and I think a lot.
God, I hope you're right.
I think a lot of it is around business models and how people will pay for their content. You know, I think that kind of journalism is, and I know this very well because I've worked in this sector for 10 years at Give Me Sport. I think that kind of journalism is fruit of being free, which means that you have to pay for it through clicks and advertising. And then it's a vicious circle. I think now moving much more towards models around branded content and what you guys do at Real Vision around subscription, or The Athletic does around subscription in sport, means that you have to change your content. People will only pay for good stuff. You know, you'll accept, you know, will Messi do it in the Premiership when it's free? You'll accept that. You won't accept it if you're paying £5 a month. So I'm an optimist in this area. I think that we're going to squeeze out a lot of this nonsense. But what it does leave you is, what is the role of the BBC, especially in sport? Because I have to say, for 10, 15 years, I can't work it out. Are they chasing audience? Are they dealing with a market that's not covered by the commercial players? You know, for these years, they've been in a neither fish nor fowl reality that this is a prime example of. You know, there's many people, you know, from many people who say, well, what's the role of the BBC in general? As somebody that lives overseas and takes great pride in the brand BBC, I'm not any of in this camp of let's privatise it or do whatever. But let's work out clearly what it's going to be in life, because today this article shows that I think it's lost its way.
Well, what, I mean, look, you say what's the BBC's role in the sport? What do BBC have the rights to? I mean, they've still got Wimbledon.
Match of the day.
They've got Match of the Day, which is it's a highlights package. They've lost Formula One. They've lost the golf. They've lost the rugby. The bigger question to me is, can they compete in an era where enormous amounts of money are being thrown at sporting leagues to get content, when the BBC is a public utility, essentially? I suspect that their days of being involved in sports are numbered, and they are going to be reduced to just being highlights packages. In which case, what's the commitment to that? If you're going to put out a highlights package of football once a week, Wimbledon, can they keep that? I don't know. Look, if you look at the Masters in the US, they've stuck with CBS for the entire length of the broadcast. Maybe the Wimbledon stick with the BBC, but I don't know what the BBC's future is in sport.
You see, that whole thing about we can't afford the rights, I think that was the argument of last decade. You know, because we've said that we believe that the world of sport media will move beyond the 90 minutes, and it'll have to be a little bit more imaginative, which I think is great news for the BBC. If you move beyond, you know, the only game in town is the person that can afford the 90 minutes, then obviously they're not a player. But when you move much more into lifestyle and highlights and fresh snackable areas like that, the BBC have got as much an advantage as anybody else, maybe more. And what I'm saying is, in a moment where that is changing, they no longer can, you know, give themselves the excuse of not having the money, they're still coming out with the same old rubbish on their website. You know, start thinking about the things that are out there, the little clip packages that are done with a bit of imagination. You don't need any money for that. You know, the higher end journalism that has been left to wither on the vine a little bit as everybody chases clicks. You know, why don't they put together a whole lot of old masters, writers, the Hugh McIlvannies, you know, put them together and do a little series about who knows what? Get some clip rights around that. You've got some really decent content you could claim to take.
I don't disagree.
But what I'm saying is, they're not doing it. They're still coming out with, could Messi do it in the Premiership? And frankly, that's not good enough. And I don't live in the BBC, so I don't pay a license fee. But if I did, I wouldn't be up for that, because it's just not good enough.
But the, you know, look, we Brits are funny. The Brits will complain about big money being spent by the BBC and big money salaries going out. I mean, I agree with you about the writing. If you can find another Hugh McIlvaney, or find 10 of them, then I'd sit down and read every word they write. But I would think that in this day and age, the BBC is not going to be the leader in moving back to long form content, because they're too scared to do that. You know, they're chasing the clicks like everybody else. When the pendulum swings, and I think you're right, it's beginning to, the BBC will embrace it, but I just don't see them as the sort of organisation that are going to take a flyer and go out front and lead this thing.
Well, I'd like to ask James, our producer, the genius at the dials, what he thinks about this, because I know he's got quite strong views about the BBC. What is what we're saying rubbish, or does it kind of like ring true with you?
Yeah, yeah. Because, I mean, I've always watched sport on the BBC or BBC-like channels when I was in South Africa or in the UK or whatever. And with less and less sport, like, you know, Formula One or the rugby and whatnot like that, like what you were saying, I personally have less and less access to it. And there's something special about having it on BBC with no adverts. There's no, you know, it's... maybe it's just me thinking about the good old days and, you know, wishing that things were the way that then simply not anymore. But it was just nice having literally 3 hours of constant Formula One without any commercial breaks, without anything, just, you know, a couple of guys on some microphones talking about the sport. You know, I don't know. I think it is a bit sad, and I kind of hope that the BBC pull their shit together.
Well, we'll see. Like I say, living overseas, I still am very, very proud about Ante. I just hope that they see there's somebody in there that realizes that there's an opportunity here. It's no longer a problem. 10 years it was fighting on the back foot. What can we still keep? What rights can we still keep? Now there's an opportunity. Go out and be what the BBC always was, the organ of... the organ of truth, the organ of quality. Have the courage to go for the McIlvannys, who, by the way, a lot of them aren't doing an awful lot because the newspapers can't afford them anymore and they've let them go. There's a lot of wonderful writers out there that you could probably get just for the bunts, you know, just because they would want to do it the way they used to do it 20 years ago. And you could put them under a BBC wrapper. And I think you would steal a real march on the competitors.
Well, look, if they do it, I'm in, because
there you go.
That's what I want to read. Well, look, let's finish this segment with my goal, because this is a cracker. My goal goes to Hales Owen Town. I don't know if you saw this story. Who they were playing Nuneaton Borough in the FA Youth Cup this past week, and with half an hour to play, Nuneaton Borough were leading 7-2. Now, at that point, one would think, Roger, you can take your foot off the gas, right? However, somehow, with half an hour left, Hales Owen Town turned a 7-2 deficit into a 9-8 victory. They were 5-0 down after 60 minutes. They were 8-6 down with 5 minutes to play. They somehow scored another 3 goals in the last 5 minutes. There were only 86 people in the crowd, but that is the kind of comeback. I mean, I've never seen anything like that. 4-1 down, 7-2 down, and they win 9-8. It's just extraordinary, and that's the kind of thing that that we love watching sport for.
I was speaking with somebody this week, and I know this is a limitation of mine, Grant, if you allow me. Everybody looks at sport slightly differently, and that's, you know, why we get so many different people to come on, because they look at it differently. I'm very aware that I have not got a lot of time for that kind of like low-level romantic, you know, in the mud, turn it around. I didn't know that this was what you were going to talk about, but it links with what I was saying earlier in the week to somebody. You know, I really like sport for the very, very top end of elite performance. And when I don't see that, you know, that 9-8 you're talking about, it's like two bald guys arguing over who's got the best comb. it doesn't do it for me, Grant. You know, I know it's lovely, but that's not my segment. And, you know, there's many people that do love that. They follow their local team. They follow them. They buy their kit. Then they see in the summer any decent player or any half-decent player that's been there gets whisked away to the higher level in the food chain. And they just brush it off and they come back the year after and they're at it again. And, you know, if there's any kind of sounding like, you know, disdain in the voice, it's not. It's because I just can't get to that place in sport. I would love to, but I just can't. You know, I want to win, and I want to win by beating the other people at the elite level. And what you're describing there is a lower level, which is, I don't call it sport, I call it recreational activity.
Ah, you're an elitist.
I am an elitist.
Get over yourself. Get over yourself.
Oh, you tell me about it. You know, listen, I've got more friends like you than people like me. And I look at them and I'm full of admiration because they can get to this place. I just can't do it, Grant. Tell me how it works. I mean, how does it work?
You've played football. I'll tell you what it's like. You've played football.
Yeah.
You know what it's like to be 5-1 down with half an hour left, and you know that you've just about given up. And you also know that when you score your second goal, there's that little flicker in your stomach. Thinks, oh, yeah, maybe. And then you get the third or fourth goal, and suddenly you think, you know, we're right back in this. And then it just becomes adrenaline. And I think anyone who's played sport at any level can surely understand that what it must have been like in that dressing room after the game. I mean, on the one side, you've got a guy who scored 5 goals and ended up on the losing team. And on the other side, you've got 11 guys plus substitutes in their dressing room just beside themselves of what they've somehow managed to do. And that sport, you can say it's not the top level, you can say whatever you want, but at some level, you play sport, as you said, to win. So to win 9-8 from 5-1 down with half an hour left to play, you know, in some ways to me, it doesn't get any better than that, because you've got two teams trying their hardest. And this is not a friendly on a Sunday night. This is the FA Youth Cup. So to them, it means everything. If you're playing at that level, the FA Youth Cup is to them what the FA Cup is to professionals. So to get a result like that in a tournament as important to you as that, I think, to me, that's what sport's all about. I don't care if it's the Premier League or the FA Youth Cup. That, to me, is the essence of why people play and why people watch it.
No, you're right at the end of the day. And I'm aware that's a limitation of mine. I can get rid of it, but, you know, maybe one day I'll get there. But anyway, great call, Grant. Excellent.
Shock therapy required, I think. All right. Well, look, that wraps up Goal on Goal and also wraps up part one of this podcast. Now, part two, we are going to be joined by a special guest, Rog. Why don't you tell the audience who is joining us, because we're in for a real treat.
Next week's guest is Ray Ranson, international class footballer from the 70s and 80s with Man City in England, football financier, innovator, investor in sports tech, and chairman of Coventry. We will be speaking to Ray about a myriad of things, and here's a little teaser of what you can expect from Ray.
Malcolm used to take us to an athletics club and running track, and we used to have spikes on, running spikes, because it wasn't about football. This was about running and 440s and 220s and all the, you know, and he had a specialist running coach to do it. This was, I'm talking 30 odd years ago, and Colin Bell was just unbelievable. He's run alongside us and laugh, and that's where he got the name Nijinsky, because he used to run alongside, and it was like commentating on a horse race, and he'd come up, you know, be running along, and we were all gasping for air, and he'd be like chatting to us saying, and it's Nijinsky coming up on the outside, and always, and we used to say, shut up, Belly, you know, and we were all gasping for air, and it was just a jog in the park for him. You're right, it was a land grab to get in the Champions League, because people could see the money coming into it, and we were very diligent about the players and who we would get involved in, and Leeds was a massive club, and still is. We weren't just sending the money out willy-nilly. We were very diligent in what we did, and it was proved. You know, when I got involved, Leeds were, you know, mid-table mediocrity. But on the back of Viduka and Oliver Decore and all these players, let's say Ferdinand, you know, and we helped finance them. And my argument is, you know, and still is, on the back of, financing players that which took a different direction, and I'm sure we'll come on to that, you know, it happens in the film industry, people... Securitization of assets has been a well-trodden path for, you know, decades, whether it's aviation or, you know, people securitize assets, you know, real estate, whatever. So why can't people securitize your biggest asset, which is your players?
All right. Well, Rog, that brings the curtain down on another podcast. All that remains is for us to say farewell and look forward to people joining us to hear Ray next week.
Thanks, Grant. Thanks for the fantastic podcast. As always, people can follow us on Entertained R on Twitter. That's R the word. On my own Twitter account, which is RPM Como as in the lake.
And you can follow me at TTMYGH. Please do subscribe to us on iTunes or Podbean or however you consume your podcasts, and tell a friend or seven. If you can spread the word, we can build this audience quickly and hopefully broaden the conversation. But that's it from us for another week. We will see you back here next time.